Off the ball, rugby.
In 20, 30 years, I don't think people will be talking and saying, well, that wasn't a great Australia side, or they were going through a tough period, or it'll go down as a series win in Australia.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0, the official non-alcoholic beer of the Premier League.
You're very welcome along to another episode of Settle In. Kathleen McNamee here, and I am delighted to say that I am joined by one of Ireland's living legends when it comes to football, Olivia O'Toole. Olivia, you're very welcome.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you. It's been a while, actually, since me and you have sat down and had a bit of a conversation. I think the last time I was catching you outside Tala, asking you your expectations for one of the women's games that we were attending.
Yeah.
In terms of, I suppose, to kind of set the picture to your career, which I know very well, but maybe some people who are listening might not, can you tell us where you first came across football and how that started for you?
I first came across football with my father, my dad. He introduced me to Match of the Day. I was 6 years of age, and I just remember being memorised by George Best running around the field and taking on players as if they weren't there. So from that moment on, Olivia had a football in her hands. Every day after school, every day, like before school, after school, didn't go home for me dinner. I just wanted to play football. And we played in the flats for 7 and 8 hours a day. And I got the feel of it, and the sport actually took over my life. Mm-hmm. When I started playing, when I was growing up, there wasn't obviously any girls' team, so I started playing with an under-age boys team, Sheriff. And it was the best thing ever. I didn't know, you go onto a pitch and play football and score goals. So when I started scoring goals, I was like, it's a great feeling, the euphoria of scoring a goal. And I was only 8 years of age then. And that's when it started. My dad got me hooked on football.
Did he realise whenever he was showing you George Best on the television, I think you said he was a United supporter, that he had lit a fire inside you, or was only maybe a little bit later down the line when you started lining up for Ireland and scoring all those goals?
Yeah, I think me dad only realised that I was a good player when I was playing for Ireland, because when I was playing for Sheriff, it was just a normal thing to him, because I played it every Saturday and every weekend. But my first Ireland match when me dad came was in Dalymount Park, and it was a friendly against Arsenal. And I happened to score the winning goal, and I've never heard my dad tell me that he loved me and he was so proud of me, and he told me that night. And I said, well, I'm obviously doing something right if he's saying that, because he's a very quiet man, you know. Men don't really show their love, but he showed me the love that night, and I knew then that I was at the making him proud.
That must have been pretty sensational to be able to watch you go up against a team like Arsenal. And you know, whether it's the men's or the women's side, it's a club with such history. And I mean, I say all this, I also do support the club, so I would say that. But, you know, it must have been pretty surreal to have been sitting for him watching Match of the Day for all those years. And fair enough, the women's teams probably, I doubt, were being shown at that stage. But then to see his daughter lining up against one of those English greats.
Well, that's the reason why I was asking, because he didn't like to come to the games. He thought he was a bad omen. And I was like, Dad, you're not like... And he said, no, every time I go, you lose. And he did come to two and we lost two. So a little superstition of his says, no, I won't go. So I asked him to come to the Daily Mountain. He was hemming and hawing, and I said, Dad, look, it's the last friendly of the year. And I said, I probably won't play again. And what was good about that game was Emma Bourne, Curtis Grant and Yvonne Tracy played for them at the time, but they were playing with us. So Olivia's getting nudged, you better score, we can't go home. And you can't go back to Arsenal and let all the girls slag us that we lost. And I remember Anita Shante, she was marking me, and she heard, I heard Emma and all is afraid to go home in case we beat you. And during the game, I scored, and she says, like, you've made a settlement that we can't say nothing to them now when they come over because they have the bragging rights,
yeah.
Which was brilliant. Like, it was great. It was great for the girls because I know the slagging that goes on when you go over. And but regardless to me, dad, he just loved it. He just loved watching me play after that. Like, he just came to every game then.
And what was it like going up against players like Anita Asante, who obviously went on to have a brilliant career over in England?
Yeah, well, at the Arsenal then was Alex Scott, Kelly Smith.
It's kind of the Champions League winner.
The girls
team.
Who won the Champions League in 2008, was it?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, it was them, it was all them, and we were like coming up, in my eyes, against superstars, you know, because Arsenal was one of the top teams growing up, and I loved watching them play as well. And to actually get to play against them was brilliant. And me and Anita, we swapped jerseys, so I have a jersey. So it's great, like, you know, like, to be in the same category as Kelly Smith and Emma Bourne and all. They're all legends, you know, so it was a great game. Long may it last.
Mm. When, to go back a little bit to growing up on Sheriff Street and kind of playing with the boys, and obviously that's something that's totally not unusual in the women's game. You know, even most of our current squad, if you look at them,
all of them,
international players,
yeah.
All of them had to do that as well, yeah. Growing up. But what was it like whenever you were playing? You know, was it accepted that you kind of came into things?
Well, not really accepted at the start. But when they see me playing, I was accepted because I was actually good. And they wouldn't let a girl play because there was a few girls, but they wouldn't let them play because they wanted to kick a ball, but they wanted somebody who could play. And I played five-a-sides with Byles for the best part of 10 years in the community games in Sheriff Street. And I was the first to be picked on their team rather than the Byles to be picked. They all wanted me on the team because I could actually play. And they actually respected me after, like, going in on a 50-50 and not going down crying and taking your battles. And they actually respected me after. And as I said, every game then and every match was Olivia's first picked. And it was great because the tables turned, because at the start they didn't want me to play. And when I didn't play with them, I practiced in around me flats, hitting off wall, right foot, left foot. And I became better to show them I had to prove something because there was no girls football and I couldn't go anywhere else. So I was like, I'm going to prove these wrong. And I actually did. Like, at the age of 11, I ended up playing, 8 till 16, I played with Sheriff Byles. And they were the making of me. They made me the strong, the compassion, the will to win, you know, everything that goes with football. They taught me all that.
How much did that street football element play into it as well?
I always say it, Kathleen, I hate going into cul-de-sacs now and I say it's no football because it mind boggles me. For the simple reason is Messi, Ronaldo, Maradona, Pele, every single, them four have just mentioned five world-class players, but they played street football before they started. And I actually don't think we're ever going to see another street footballer, only on the basis that, well, probably from Ireland and anyway, because you're not allowed to play football now. And I played football on the street after school, 2:30 finish, 3 o'clock dinner, up to 8 and 9 o'clock in the night. A car wouldn't come in for me, mother. We used to have 9 poles, washing poles, in the flats. And you picked your pole and you guarded that pole with your life. Because if it was hit, you were out. So, like, it went on for 4 and 5 hours every single night. And we played that for the best part of 15 years, my 15 years. But now that I don't see kids playing street football, it actually makes me sad.
Well, there's so many skills that you get from those sort of games. And as you say, it can be rough and tumble at times, and you do have to take your knocks because you're playing on concrete, you're not playing on grass. So you either have to get smart enough to avoid it or dig into it a little bit.
Well, that's it. Either I crumble or I'll stand up to it. So I didn't crumble. I crumbled at the start and then I proved them wrong. And as I said, like the tarmac, the gravel, like the sliding. So we used to slide and tackle and everything on tarmac. Like, so like, you used to go home bloodied. Me ma used to thought I was fighting. No, it's just football battles.
And then what was it like when you did start playing within all-female setups? Because I imagine that must have been a little bit different because you're trying to prove yourself in a different way.
Yeah, well, to girls, like, I played up to the age of 16 with Sheriff, and my last game for Sheriff was in Phoenix Park. And we were playing a team. And I went up for the ball, I headed the ball, but I also got the player, and his nose busted. So they were all around, and then somebody pointed out, she's a girl. And my manager was like, yeah, what's wrong? We don't want her on the team. She has to go off the field. So, of course, I was like, Hugo is my manager. I said, Hugo, they can't throw me off the team. He said, unfortunately, but you can. Because the rules at the time didn't allow girls to play with boys. So that was basically my last game for the boys. Where we won the game and anyway, and I was like to Hugo, I said, what am I going to do? Because there's no girls teams around. So a girl, Trisha Ryan, got in contact with me. She worked in a FOSS course. She asked me to go to Drumcondra Ladies. I was 17, 18. I didn't even know these existed up there beside Talca Park across the road. And when I seen these girls playing, I was amazed that they actually could play like me. Like I was gobsmacked. And when I started playing with them, like, it was natural to me. It was like I should have been there forever. And the girls took me under their wing, and Drumcondra Ladies actually won so much in the 10 or 12 years that I was with them, because we were with each other for nearly 8 years. Linda, Sharon, Trish, they all looked after me. But I was amazed that they had the same passion, same will to win, and same love for football as me. So basically it wasn't a transition. I just rolled into it, if you want to put it that way.
And did you get any sense of, I don't know, relief or anything that you'd found other women that liked football the same way you did? I mean, obviously, you got on really well with all the lads that you were playing with, but it is something really different being surrounded by other women who are interested in football, who are passionate about football. You know, I remember going to my first women's game and just being in a totally different crowd and atmosphere and watching people that looked like me on the pitch and being like, okay.
Yeah.
This is what everyone else has been enjoying for the last while.
Well, that was like a thing to me. I was like, I didn't know those girls' teams. And then when we got into a league, there was Castle Rovers, there was Elm Rovers, there was Belvedere. And I was like, how come I didn't see none of this growing up? I didn't know that they existed. And when I did get into the girls' football, it was much better than the boys. Like, well, for me, playing with Sheriff, it home pitch was on Fairview in Fairview Park, and I actually had my own dressing room, little small room, because I was a girl, I couldn't change in front of them.
Mm.
And to be in with girls and then just change in front of everyone, and be natural and just be yourself, it was so warm. And like, because as I said, when I was changing with the boys, I used to have to hide it. And then monthly things as well. Like, so it was awkward, but they made it very okay for me, you know. They tried their best.
Mm.
But going into a girl's thing with transition, it was like, as I said, it was like rolling off onto another pitch.
And so when then did the Ireland ambitions start for you, or was it a case of someone approaching you and planting the seed in your head?
Well, the first time I ever wanted to play for Ireland, I don't actually know what age I was, but it was the year Sonia O'Sullivan won her the athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And she stood up and they played the national anthem. And I wanted that. I wanted to stand up and be proud for my national anthem. And I was thinking of a way how, and I said like, obviously not football. So I tried other sports. I tried basketball. I tried just to be able to hear my national anthem, standing for it. And when the football, I said to myself, one day I will, one day, please God. Because Ireland, they had no underage team. They didn't even exist then. and senior women's day, no underage. When I went to for my trials, I got a letter to say I'd been picked to go to trials for Ireland in Santry. I was 19 years of age. And Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Friday was 500 girls, Saturday was 250. Sunday was 150. Then you went home and the following Monday they said they'd get in touch. And obviously no phones, no things then, so it was at the letterbox sitting and waiting for a letter. It came...
to the postman.
Yeah, the postman. The following Monday, a letter came to say you had been picked for the European champions with Spain and Sweden. And I was overwhelmed with emotion because it was my little dream years ago to play for my country, to hear the national anthem in any sport, but I was doing it with my sport that I love. So I got the letter, we went training, and when you go in and you see all the 23 girls out of 500 girls, you feel so privileged to be there.
Mm.
You know, so... And then that's when the walk starts.
Did you feel much of a step up when you went into the national side? Because you mentioned the teams there that you're going up against, you know, Spain, Sweden, obviously they're very different characters now than they were then, but still, you know, top teams. Mm. You scored against Spain, I think, on your debut as well, so you kind of made your mark straight off. But did you feel that extra pressure coming with the green jersey?
I know, like, people feel pressure, but I never felt pressure because I always thought it was a privilege. So I never felt, oh, I have to do this, I have to... I went out and had fun, and I loved... When I played with fun, I played great. If I played nervous, I thought about other things other than the football. So me going out, I was... You get that 5 minute when the national anthem is playing, the nervous. But the minute the ref blows the whistle, it's like it was natural to me. It was natural for Olivia to go and take on 3 and 4 players and try to score from left side of the field. And I never liked going back. Never liked going back, putting the ball back to the left ball. I always forward thinking. And the manager used to give out to me because he used to say, you can't take on the whole team. And in international level, obviously you can't. But I used to take over 3 or 4 and then make a pass. And he'd say, yeah, well done, Livian. But he always wanted me to release the ball first. Because, as you know, international is different. Mm. You can't take on 6 and 7 players.
I mean, you can try. You might not get very far with it. But you watch some of the Spanish players these days and that's exactly what they're trying to do. Mm. And of that time, is there any particular games or, I suppose, campaigns that stick out in your mind as particularly special? Because, I mean, you scored a rake of goals over 130 caps.
Mm. The one game that sticks out to me is the Iceland game away. We were in the Euros. We were at the beating them 2-1 at home. And if we'd have got a draw or a win over there, we'd have went to our first European Championships. But unfortunately, Iceland is in the name ice. We played on an ice rink. And for me to go to my manager and say, there's no way we can play on that. And for my manager to turn around and says, the only reason this game be called off, if it starts on one, he smack his head and get it. That was his answer. And I was like, but we're playing on an ice rink. And I remember Eurosport was shown at the time. And when I got home and looked back and the commentary even said herself, how on earth is this game going ahead? Because I know for a fact today it had been called off. And that's the one thing that I have a regret over. One game that could have brought me to a Euros.
Mm.
Mm. And my favourite game was in San Diego against the USA because we walked out to 20,000 people. And I know you said I don't get nervous, but I couldn't get over. I nearly withered on the pitch. Like, I was like, how is... Because as you know, America is like 15, 10 years ahead of us.
Mm.
And I was in awe. I was just, where's all these people? And after the game, even though the beer was 4-0, the amount of kids and women that wanted their autograph, and because we've never had it in Ireland. We go to Richmond Park, we've 300 people there. There's 20 people out of each family, so it's not really a crowd. It's just their family.
Yeah.
So you're not used to walking into a stadium with 20,000 people. And that was, it was brilliant. It was absolutely, it's an image that stays in your head a lot when I speak about football.
I can imagine, because I remember the sense I got in Sydney for that opening game in the World Cup against Australia and that record crowd that was there, 70,000, 80,000. And I like was trying to put myself in the minds of, you know, Katie and Denise and all of them walking out Courtney. And how do you feel in that moment? And obviously now it's a little bit different in that you have Arsenal, for an example, having all their games this season in the Emirates. So they are a little bit more used to it. But I imagine there is still a little bit of that, you know, ooh, this is cool, this is big.
Mm. Now, I had an interview with Rio and she said when we walked out, like it wasn't like a normal game. You knew you were at a World Cup and you knew you had to perform. Where in a campaign, in a group, it's completely different. But as you said, I was there myself and I was like, I'd love to know what's going through their heads now. Just one person come over and tell me, Livy, this is brilliant, this is great.
I remember seeing you before the game and you were just so excited. You were running around the press room and was it you were there working? Was it ITV?
I was working with ITV.
The poor ITV guy, I think, was trying to catch your attention and you were just so excited because you're like, Sam Kerr's out for the game. And he was like, Olivia, we need to go now.
he was very nice. His name is Paul and...
He was lovely, yeah.
Yeah, Air National Anthem. And I was standing up in the team with him and I profusely sing my national anthem anytime it comes on, even when I'm at home. I stand up and I sing it. And he sent me a video of me singing my national anthem in Australia and I had no clue he was recording me. And I am singing me on my own up in the stands and looking down and the goosebumps that come over me, the emotion. I actually had a tear in my eye. It was just... To hear a national anthem at a World Cup that I thought we never would, it was just brilliant.
Is it still that special to you because you have represented Ireland and because you got to live that dream of yourself standing in the green jersey and singing the national anthem?
Yeah. Like, from singing it on the pitch to singing it on the stands, completely two different emotions. The emotion standing on the pitch... You just feel all these goosebumps coming over, your chest is sticking out, you're so proud. And when you're in with the first night of the World Cup, the stands against Australia, I was sobbing because I loved that about 30 or 40,000 people in that crowd was Irish and they were singing like me. So it's a completely different aspect of being on the pitch and off the pitch, but I'd rather be on the pitch.
On this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast, sitting with you.
Do you know what? As one of the boys asked me to come on and speak this morning, I says I'd rather eat my own hand. But I think we were out in front last week. So it's important, you know, just to get out as much when you lose as well now.
And there was also some of this.
I think respect is earned, not given. I think the performance from Australia in the second test would give credibility to what he's saying there. I think prior to that performance, I wouldn't say he had a leg to stand on. So, yeah, he's a right to be pissed off, but before that, like, it's fair enough.
Catch up now elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off the Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.
I'd say if you could have lined up that day, you would have quite happily. Could have done with you as well.
I should have
given
a fair text and asked to put me on the last 15 minutes.
Oh, God. We won't relive the result, but we can relive the feeling before the whistle went.
I actually thought Jordan the game, we actually deserved a 1-1.
Oh, yeah. Like a draw would have been a fair result in that game.
I thought, like, the last 15 minutes of that game, we were on top. Mm. We came into the game and I said to myself, another 5 minutes we'd have scored.
It's the eternal problem with that squad, and I know it's changed a lot since then, though, that sometimes, and we saw the same against Wales in the playoffs for the Euros that are going on now, that for some reason we just seem to click in the last 15 minutes.
I don't understand it.
And it seems to me it takes us that long to...
Mind boggles me.
Yeah.
Because at the start of every game, it's like that, you know, do you say I'm nervous? Well, to me, every single player playing for Ireland is nervous. Only watching back on the games that they've played recently, because they're coming into games in the second half. Mm. You know, they're taking over games in the second half.
Mm.
So I think that needs to be rectified. Go out and start the way you started the second half.
Yeah. In terms of when you were playing to, say, getting to that heights of the World Cup, what was it like witnessing that change come in Irish football? Because you were there for a long part of it and then obviously decided to retire and let other people take up the mantle. But like, did you struggle at the start watching it all go on and not be involved, or were you kind of happy enough to...
Oh, well, when I retired, Kathleen, I wasn't in a good place, to tell you the truth. Because I knew I was going to miss the dressing room, camaraderie, me friends, just everything, the travel day, just everything about being involved, not only Ireland, just your club as well. I knew that was gone and I had nothing to replace it. And that killed me. And a few people I've been talking to on the Irish team of lately are considering it. And I was like, please sit down and really, really think about it, because it's not a nice place to be when you retire. Only for the simple, it's very lonely. It's, you don't get the, you know, the text, where are you? We're having breakfast. You're running late, you know. Come on, we sneak down the shop. You know, little things like that, you actually, absolutely, 100%, I miss terrible. But how I got back in, I got involved in football. I ended up taking over a ladies' team. But for anyone else that is thinking of retiring, think long and long and hard about it. If your body can do 70 minutes, let it do the 70 minutes. If you can do 60, do the 60. Just prolong it as long as your body can, you know?
Yeah, I always think, I've talked to a lot of people about retirement from sport, and generally everyone says the same thing. Very rarely is someone going into it absolutely delighted.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's so many elements of your life that you don't really consider, you know, that you're saying there. There's always people around.
Mm-hmm.
You're always wearing your training kit or whatever it is when you're in camp, and then you wear your jersey when you're out on the pitch. You know, stuff like meals, you have to eat a certain way, you have to live a certain way. And then all of a sudden this insane structure, it's almost like a continuation of school routine.
Yes, yes.
And then suddenly you leave, and it's a lot of a sharper leave, I suppose, than leaving something like a school system, because you can kind of prepare for that because it's going to come at a very exact age. Whereas that just, you don't have that in football.
It's gone,
or
it's gone completely. The day you retire, it's gone. The next day, I like, so what do I do? You know, you have to either get into something like yourself, you know, podcast, football, something genuinely involved in football if you want to see and have that camaraderie, because you do meet the girls when you're away in football. And but as I said, any person that is thinking about it, just have a good think about it. Because it took me nearly a year to actually get over the fact that I was retired. And I couldn't comprehend going to the girls' games, and I actually didn't for a while, because I just didn't think, like, when I retired, right, if you're finished, I'll stay away. So I stayed away. And it probably was the worst thing I did, because when I went back, I was like, where were you, Livy? Where did you go? And blah. You have to sit back and think about what you want to do, especially after retiring. But I'm involved in football now, and I always will be involved in football, but it's never the same buzz as being with the team. Mm. Never.
It's been an interesting few years for women's football in particular in this country. You know, we hit the highs of qualifying for the first ever major tournament, the World Cup. We were both over there. We saw the impact it had. We saw the crowds that turned up. It was incredible. And I think there was kind of a feeling at the time that this was a great springboard and a great launching pad for football here. Do you feel like that has been capitalized on in the 2-odd years since?
No, not as much as I should have been. It could be. I think it's like everyone, every time you ask questions, it's a slow process. And which I don't understand, Kathleen, because me, myself, I've had chats with people in the FAI. I've spoke to managers and I've told them, they've asked my opinion and I've told them what needs to be there. We need academies. We need academies from kids coming out of school where they have it in England, Germany, and I don't think we are ever going to progress unless we get that structure in. Because as you know, girls 18 and 17, we don't want them going to England to play. We want them to stay here, play in our National League, make our National League professional. Girls don't have to walk. All they have to do is concentrate on their football and their training. But it's a long, long way off.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's not getting pushed enough. Because me personally, if it did, I reckon we'd be probably in the ranking of 14, 15, in the ranking of a European team. Because we have got the talent. It is there.
Mm.
It's so frustrating.
It is frustrating. And the fact that, there's so many different issues. There's, I suppose, the issue that we had for a while of not having a head of women and girls football and then having someone for a year and now not having someone again. The fact that the funding doesn't seem to be there as well. You look at the action plan that was released for women and girls football and there was no actual real targets on it. There was no numbers. I remember...
It's great. Everybody can do the talk, but nobody can do the action. Like, there's no action. Everyone can talk. There's no physical action. Show us. Show me what your plan is on a board, but implement it on a field. You know what I'm trying to say, Kathleen?
Yeah.
Everyone can talk about it. I've talked about it and nothing's happened, but it's just me personally, I'm probably getting into trouble for saying this, but I think the FAI needs a whole new infrastructure of people who want to work for the grassroots and all the way up. For women and men, girls and boys. I just feel that, when I played, we pushed for tracksuits. Mm. You know what I mean? Girls are pushing now to get paid and equal pay, and it's just so long of a process. I don't know why it takes so long, but as you said, it's money, it's infrastructure, it's people that need to come on board, companies to get involved, to sponsor. There's loads of factors, but I just don't think an association does enough for women. For the women in football.
Mm. Well, it's definitely, it hasn't been what we've expected over the last couple of years. I think, there obviously are a lot more girls playing football, which is brilliant because they're being inspired by the national team and also having the likes of Katie winning a Champions League title or Denise captaining North Carolina Courage, Courtney being one of the best goalkeepers in the league over in England, if not the best, arguably.
She's absolutely phenomenal at the moment.
I loved seeing her get the opportunity to captain over in the States.
It was a great gesture. I loved it.
I think it's nice because for anyone listening at home, if you've ever met Courtney, she's quite a quiet person. She's very polite. She's absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
And then you see her on the pitch screaming at someone, at her defenders to get back or asking them what they're doing. And she clearly has that leadership mentality and is so driven and so hardworking. But then you just have a chat with her and you're like, you're just nice.
Hey, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I'm glad she's getting the plaudits she lays. From when I started looking at Courtney, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, she was on the bench, she wasn't playing.
Mm.
And from then to now, she's a world-class keeper.
Yeah.
She's at the coming on leaps and bounds. And as you said, to be keeper of the year and to be handed the captaincy for Ireland, I'm so proud of her and so proud for our family as well.
Yeah, no, it's been a brilliant journey.
She has worked hard for it.
She
absolutely has. 100%.
And it was an area that, for for a long time after Emma Byrne, we really struggled in terms of getting consistency. And I don't think we would have qualified for our first tournament if it wasn't for that consistency that we found.
Well, we wouldn't have qualified if Shanna said that.
True.
In Hampton, you know what I mean? When I was there and I was like with my friend, I was like, she's going to say that. I was, you know, when you get a good feeling.
Yeah.
I had a feeling it was Ireland's night and she saved it.
Mm.
Brilliant.
So what do you think about, say, the national team now and where it goes? Because it does feel like there's still a bit of a mentality block there over what happened in Wales. And obviously there's been such a massive turnaround in players with retirements. It's still at a stage where it feels like the team is maybe in a little bit of a transitional phase.
People say a transitional phase with 3 or 4 players leaving and retiring. But the players that are there, they're there 5, 6, 7 years. So they have loads of experience. I was saying that the likes of like Jess Stapleton stepping up, Abby Larkin stepping up, they have stepped up and they get picked and they perform.
Mm.
I don't think like the transition is like, it's like to replace Louise, replace Niamh, replace, there's girls there that can replace them that's been there 4 and 5 years. They need to step up now.
Mm.
You know, so to me, there shouldn't be any transition. There should be just gel into it. You're taking Louise's place, you're taking the, I know it's not that easy, I'm just figure of speech, but I mean, they've been there, they've watched Louise and Niamh for 4 or 5 years. So to me, like your transition year for them should be 3 or 4 months getting into a position. Now you know where you stand and where you need to play. Because, like me, Wales going to the Euros before Ireland, just absolutely let me gobsmack, because playing with Ireland all my life and we played Wales all our life. And we were always ahead of Wales in everything. And for them to qualify for Euros and us not to, it was so disheartening. So, and it was, as you said, there's no transition. Step up to the mark, girls. Like, I mean, it's Wales. You need, I watched girls there on that game, with that game, and they were moping around the pitch and not doing that. And I just thought, like, they didn't step up to the mark, like, for the playoff. And they did let us down, because, to me, we should have beat Wales.
Mm.
But I thought we went out there with the impression that we had beaten them already and we can just turn up.
Yeah, which very much wasn't the case.
No.
And Wales had an incredible mentality.
They deserved it.
I remember doing post-match interviews with the Irish players afterwards, and it was right beside the Welsh changing rooms in the Aviva.
The screaming.
Yeah, fair enough, they absolutely deserved it. You know, I don't think it wasn't a case of feeling we were hard done by in the end with the result in terms of the actual play.
No, I thought that Wales deserved it. And especially, I thought we deserved at least a draw or a win over in Wales, because I was in Wales. And to me, it was just, they didn't push the girls. It was like they were told, we'll settle for a draw.
Mm.
Sit back, take the, you know, the attack and come on to us and then break. But it didn't happen. It just didn't happen. And the last 15 minutes, we actually could have won. Shiva was on our own up at the tour part of the Wales game. Katie had the ball over on the left full. There was nobody marking Shiva.
Mm.
But Katie went back with the ball instead of giving it to Shiva, for Shiva to go at it.
Mm.
And this frustrated me big time, because I knew it was after being drilled into them, stay, park the bus, basically. And there was millions of opportunities for us to score in Wales.
What then do you feel, I don't know how much of the Euros you've seen, but obviously Belgium did qualify for them as well. We're meeting them in the playoffs in October. Wouldn't be mad optimistic after seeing some of the games that they've played, considering how we went in League B in the Nations League.
Yeah, but I thought Belgium have a few good players, you know, so probably not well-known players, but they're good. And I think the girls, like, it's going to be very tight, I feel.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry, that's what I mean, in that watching them in the Euros, I'd be worried about
like,
our chances.
They were very unlucky in the Euros, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, me, if I was Carl, I'd be sitting down and be sitting down with the girls a week before this game, be watching one of them Euros and tell them, like, this is their strengths and this is their faults. Obviously, a manager will do that. But I'm on the edge of who will win.
Mm.
So, obviously, I want us to win, but the girls have to turn up on the day.
Yeah. Well, we can reconvene after that one and see if we were correct all these many months out. Who is your pick to win the Euros? Do you have one?
Believe it or not, I put €10 on Italy about 4 weeks ago.
There you go.
And they're in the semi-final.
I mean, incredible win from them.
Absolutely.
Against Norway. You just never seem to be able to get it done, despite the talent on that team.
That's like, I mean, your woman Graham, I was looking at her yesterday. She was leaving her right forward two players. So, right, she has the ability to go forward and do her thing. But you have to help your right full. And Italy exposed it for the whole game.
Mm.
Even, and the right full actually did great with her player. But once the left side of midfield came in, Graham was just standing there looking at her going back. I don't agree with that. You're a great player. You can score goals, but you also have to do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And your job is defending and going forward. That's a right side of midfielder's position. Attacking player, doesn't matter. You defend, you help your team. And I didn't see any of that all four last night. Good or writing, shouldn't be in there.
Mm.
Hennenberg didn't get absolutely nothing up front, nothing. The two times she did get it to her feet, the ball bounced off her, and there's another penalty she missed. But she always comes up with a goal.
I know.
Always.
You could see the relief in her body language whenever she scored that goal, because it was a really poor penalty.
But she's probably kicking herself now, because if she'd have scored a penalty and scored, they'd have won.
Yeah.
Football's a mad game, isn't it?
It is a mad game, but that's why we love it, Olivia.
I love it.
Thank you very much for coming in. Settle In is brought to you by Guinness 00. I've really enjoyed our chat today.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Thank you very much, Caitlin.
Look forward to our next one.
Yeah. I'm better when you keep
Settle In on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Guinness 00, the official non-alcoholic beer of the Premier League.